Hey, real quick, if you're a business owner that wants to stand out in the market and expand your customer base, I'd love to send you a copy of my free ebook. Visit our website at danielleclark.uk to get your copy now, or follow the link in the show notes. Welcome to Build Better Brands. I'm Danielle Clark, and this show is here to provide insights, techniques, and strategies to help you establish a better brand with confidence and clarity. We're on a mission to help as many people as possible start and build stronger brands so they can create happier, healthier lives for themselves and those around them. Welcome to another episode of Build Better Brands. Today I am joined by Matt Clutterham. Matt's very bold. Matt creates bold strategies for brand, and he's a transformational brand strategist and founding partner of Q Branch Consulting. He's also a speaker and board member and all-around nice guy, and knows an awful lot about branding. So welcome to the show, Matt.
Really excited to be here. Been looking forward to this.
Yeah, likewise, me too. So we actually met through another Matt. There's a lot of you Matts about.
There is, yeah.
Matt Davies, who runs a masterclass full of, I think there's about 30 or so brand strategists and creative thinkers and creative directors all come together once a month to talk about the wonderful world of branding. And then me and Matt actually found out that we don't live a million miles away from each other at all.
It was crazy, actually. I sort of joined the group. You were already a member. And I went onto the little portal that there is. And the first thing I saw was a picture of you stood like on a day out about 300 yards away from our front door. And I was like, oh my God, like, I've joined a global group and there's someone who lives literally around the corner.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? And it just goes to show, actually, that, you know, when you join these groups, it's always worthwhile actually trying to get to know people aside from their expertise and the role that they do, and find out what makes them tick and also where they live. Because if it wasn't for that, then we wouldn't have been able to catch up and go and have a coffee and get to know each other the way that we have. So it's been really nice.
Yeah, I really love it. It's great. Like, the online group's fantastic and that one's particularly good, but I really like to get to know the people behind the pixels.
Yeah, people behind the pixels. I like that. That's cool.
I heard it recently. I can't remember who said it. And I was like, yes, I'm going to latch onto that one. That really resonates.
Why not? But yeah, Matt, so your journey, it's been an interesting one, because you didn't, like so many people that come into the brand strategist realm, have come from a background in often graphic design, or they've been creative director, or maybe they've been, I don't know, a copywriter or something. But your journey actually started in a very different world, which was theatre, right?
Yeah.
Which is really, really fascinating. So can you just tell us what inspired this transition from your theatrical background influences to, you know, you working in branding today?
Yeah, sure. So creativity was always there, and I did consider graphic design like early on as a kid. I was always drawings, like sketching. It was always more design biased, I would say, what I was doing, even as at 3 years old. It was more design than art, I would say. So I was always creating. I thought about graphic design. I quite liked it. I did an A-level in graphic design, but the bright lights of theatre were calling. My dad worked in theatre. In a technical capacity, and then in sort of management of theatre buildings and spaces. So I sort of had that influence too. And quite, you know, between you and me and the listeners, I used to quite enjoy bunking off from the really academic subjects in school to do stuff like lighting for the school play and, you know, stuff like that. I'm dyslexic. And so, you know, any way of swapping the academic for the creative was always... was always going to really work for me. And yeah, I sort of fell into theatre really, really low down. There was no real training for theatre, particularly in lighting when I started. There's some great courses now, great degree courses, but there wasn't at the time.
And so you've got this extensive experience in lighting design. And actually, it was When I came to your launch event, which was at time of recording, this was about a week ago now, I believe. I remember walking into the room and seeing all the lights and thinking, wow, it looks amazing in here. And then finding out that actually you've got vast experience in lighting design. So that kind of was like, oh, right. So that's why it looks so cool in here. He really does know what he's doing. And that was evident.
Yeah, it was a bit of a cheat there. Yeah,
That's okay. The room looked amazing with you had purple, was it purple and turquoise? Turquoisey blue?
of magenta and teal. Yeah.
Yeah, it looked awesome and it made a massive difference to the room. So how does that, your experience in lighting then, translate? How do these nuances translate into the realm of creating brand experiences?
So I think really, if we start quite early on in my lighting design career, I was doing what most, I think, designers across all fields start off doing, and that's they start off making things look really nice. Like, and that's the focus. Like, I want everything to look great. Someone took me under their wing early on and said, "Look, Matt, what you're doing is awesome. It looks fantastic, but there's another thing going on here, which I don't think you've really thought about, and that is, we are trying to help the audience through a story, and we're trying to connect the writer's story and the writer's vision and the director's intention to the audience in a psychological way. And light's a really powerful tool to do that with. And that really, I would say, that really changed my life, that little insight that I hadn't thought about. And I went away and I did a lot of reading. And another theme throughout my career is when an idea really resonates, I just geek out on it until I really sort of get it like 400%. And then, but I don't just read it, I apply it. And I think that's really key too. Like, I try stuff out and I experiment and I see what works and what doesn't work and what has an impact, what doesn't have an impact. Yeah. So I became really, really into the whole psychology behind connection with an audience generally, I think. Sure, I was doing it through light mainly because that's what people were paying me to do, but I was really just all about the psychology of what was going on, why people felt a certain way about a certain thing, and what we could do to influence that.
That's super interesting, especially when you said that it really, this idea of storytelling changed your life. You mentioned the power of storytelling in your work. Storytelling comes up all the time because as humans, that's what we resonate. We are told stories from when we are children and babies, and it's a way in which we communicate and we learn. I remember delving into Aesop's Tales as a kid, which was all about teaching you rights and wrongs and how to be a good person and all of that. Storytelling is really powerful. But how do you leverage that then to create these impactful brand experiences? And maybe could you, if you can, share a memorable project or campaign where storytelling really played a pivotal role?
Yes, so storytelling is really ingrained in our history as humans and our sort of collective consciousness. Right back to the cave times. Before we had language, we were telling stories through cave paintings on the walls. It's right there, deeply ingrained into our psychology. So the power of storytelling when it comes to brand is for us to remember something as a human. We have to connect something, and normally something we have experienced through one of our senses. And it helps if that's a deeply emotional sort of sensory action with an object. And then that allows us and our brains to recall that later on. And that's really what we're doing when we're trying to build a brand. We both agree that, the brand actually lives in the mind of the customer, not on paper or not on what we do. So actually, what we're trying to do in brand building is to get the customer to recall our business at every possible opportunity. And the way we do that psychologically is we link our business and our brand and what we're doing with a deeply emotional experience. And the more we reinforce that, it's like knitting. Like every time you do another line of knitting, You just reinforce that and reinforce that and reinforce that again. A good way to explain it is, if you remember the going back to your grandma's kitchen and the smell of her cooking apple pie, for instance, and then years and years and years and years later, every time you smell cooking apple pie, you were emotionally right back there in your grandma's kitchen, feeling all those feelings you felt. And that's what we're trying to do when we build brands is you know, create that emotional connection that means every time you see our logo, every time you see something we put out, you have that emotional connection. You're right back there in your grandma's kitchen, smelling that apple pie and living those experiences. Where we have to be careful is that actually negative emotional experiences connect much stronger than positive ones. So we've got to be careful here, and we've got to really sort of work on the emotions that we want to connect with real intention, and that comes through brand strategy.
It's so interesting when you talk about emotion and the way in which, a smell can evoke feelings and a memory. That's what brand does. And when you were talking about positive brand experiences, loads of brands started popping into my head that, when I first started playing hockey and I bought my first stick, it was a grey stick. And I always buy grey sticks now because I remember the excitement of going to get that stick and playing hockey. And I'm now invested in greys because it was kind of a big, they were part of my story when I first started playing. It was a big part of me learning to play, getting more confident. And for me, greys is the choice. There's loads of other hockey sticks out there, but it's always going to be greys because of that.
Yeah, in psychology they call it anchoring. That for me is the whole purpose of what we're trying to do when we build brands is to anchor our business and what we're doing with people because they're the people who are buying and they're also the people who are going to come and work for you and invest in you. No matter what you're trying to do in your business, you're going to need to connect with and emotionally connect with and influence people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was doing a talk yesterday. I got invited to go and talk at my old university in Staffordshire. And it's the first time I've been back for 13 years, 13, 14 years. So I felt very, very nostalgic. But I was sharing some stories around my journey and my life now and branding and work. And one of the things that we talked about was brand, and I was showing some visuals, and I said to them, I showed a word actually, and the word was romance. And I said, I'm thinking of a city. What city is it? Everyone was like, Paris. I was like, yeah. Because that is the association that we have with Paris, that it's the most romantic city in the world.
That's classic anchoring. That is classic psychological anchoring. Yeah.
And it's super powerful. And even though I've never been to Paris, and some of the students I was talking to hadn't been either, some had, but we all immediately make this association with Paris being romantic. And we believe it to be true, whether we actually know for ourselves whether it is, that's the narrative that carries. And it's so powerful. And that's the thing about brand. It just has the ability to really impact and control what people think and believe.
Yeah, so to believe something, to like really believe it in our core, there has to be certainty. So we have to have certainty that we are right, otherwise it's quite a fluffy belief. And the way we create certainty is just to reinforce something over and over and over again. And that is what has happened with Paris, right? Is we've how many films have we seen where the story is romance in Paris? You
Too
know,
many.
too many. But every time it comes down to a story being told and there being a common thing. Like you immediately romance Paris, Eiffel Tower, you know, these are all physical sort of elements that have been anchored through storytelling to the word romance. It's mad.
It is mad. And team that with, it's almost like these are Paris's brand touch points. You've got the Eiffel Tower, you've got red wine, you've got the music, the accent,
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
food.
Every single one of those, a brand identity element of the brand Paris
Absolutely.
that's been created through stories. One great one that I did when we talk about, so that naturally has evolved over time with Paris, right? But sometimes with a brand, we've got to manufacture that story to start with. And I think a great one, because it's quite simplistic to tell, is when General Motors and Vauxhall were first launching the new car Insignia in the country, which was quite a few years ago now. They'd already done their brand strategy. They had their strap lines and everything. And the big key message that they wanted the audience to understand was that Insignia delivered out of this world luxury, out of this world performance at a level that was accessible to the masses. So I was brought on by an agency to a team of people who basically had to convey this message through a brand launch. The overriding thing that came out of our first meeting was that if this is out of this world, then the car literally has to arrive from out of this world. And so we engineered an experience where we actually faked a UFO crash in central London.
Wow.
And overnight, a team of people with whole load of diggers and machinery basically dug up all of the grass outside of City Hall in London and planted a fake UFO in a huge crater with, smoke machines pouring smoke out of it and all the rest of it. And the press came down and were taking photos. And we're like, well, like UFO crash in central London, what the hell? And we built the story up, and we built the story up over a couple of days. It got surrounded by fencing. There were sort of fake MI5 guards all over the place. And crowds were coming from far and wide to see this UFO sticking out of the ground. And then a crane came along and lifted the UFO out. And when the UFO got to about 30 meters off the floor, I think, doors in the bottom of the spaceship opened, and the brand new Vauxhall Insignia, like, free fell out of the bottom of it and drove off. And that was Vauxhall Insignia arriving from out of this world.
Wow, what a way to launch a brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and that's a huge, massive, expensive example, because brands like that have a lot of money to throw at this. But if these big brands are willing to spend that sort of money, it should be telling us with the smaller brands, this is worth looking at and this is worth thinking about, because these people are spending a lot of money on creating an experience that can be anchored psychologically to their brand. So
Yeah.
with the smaller brands, even like a corner launch of a corner shop, what experience can we create around that can link emotion, talking, people talking about it to what we're doing?
Wow. I mean, that launch sounds amazing. I'd have loved to have seen it, but I can imagine it certainly got a lot of attention and got people curious, and it's exciting and it's disruptive, right? I mean, you've launched about 300 brands in your
300
time,
brands and products, I would say, over the last 25 years.
which is incredible, right? Incredible. And one of the things I always talk about is process and having a process and learning to love it. Could you walk us through the process that you take in terms of having to, when you start conceptualizing and then executing a brand launch, what are the key factors or key things that contribute to a successful brand launch?
I think it comes down really to one question, which is a powerful question and it's hard to answer, but it's worth answering, is what do we want people to feel? And that's really key. And the word feel is massive there, because if we can work out what we want people to feel, there is a lot of psychology out there, even by just going on Google and typing, how do you generate the psychology to make people feel this way, it can be manufactured. There is a way to manufacture it.
I'm trying to think, okay, how do you, when we talk about brand and it being a feeling, it's really difficult, isn't it? And I think that's why actually there's lots of talk at the minute about brand itself having a bit of an identity problem. Because trying to impact the way people feel about something and trying to evoke an emotion, it's absolutely doable, and we know that, but it's really, really hard. And then it's also very hard to know, once you've put a brand out into the world, how people actually do feel about it.
Yeah, so there's a few things there. So yeah, branding has a massive identity crisis. I'm often surprised by how many people still say, well, it's, you know, I've got the brand, it's just a logo, right? No, that's the visual thing that you need to anchor your brand to. Absolutely, it's a massively important part of the brand, but it's not the brand. And the feelings are important because I think it was Simon Sinek who brought this to the forefront of our thinking, was that actually no decision making happens in the part of the brain that deals with logic. So your brain's broken up into lots of chunks, and each part of the brain has a really different function. And the part of the brain that deals with logic has no decision making capacity whatsoever, which is mad, isn't it? All of the decision making capacity you have as a person happens in the part of the brain that also deals with emotion. We then will use logic to back up the reasoning why we've bought the expensive car rather than take the kids on holiday and stuff like that.
Or
But
convince ourselves that it was the right thing to do.
more ourselves. Actually, I definitely needed the latest iPhone, right? And here's the logical reasons why. But it's not the logic that made the purchase, it was the emotion. So if we're trying to get people to take action, we've got to get involved in their emotion.
I think sometimes people get so hung up on the tactics. Okay, I've got a product, I've got a service, and these are the tactics I'm going to use to promote it and shout about it, whether that's on social media or a website or email or video or whatever. But the thing that's often missing is, okay, but why? Why should someone pick your products or service over someone else? What's special about it? How is it going to help an individual, a group of people, a community? How is it going to help them thrive and survive? And why should they actually care? And it's about figuring that bit out and then making a decision about what tactics you're going to use to communicate that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Tactics are great. Like, they absolutely have their place, but they are all short-term things. And you need to run the short-term things alongside a much longer process of strategy and relationship building. And when the two work together, that's magical. You know, that's brilliant. But all of the tactics have to be informed by basically the question of how do I want someone to feel? I mean, you know, when you are looking at hockey sticks, you know how that makes you feel. What happened?
Excited. I visualize myself scoring a goal with it, if I'm perfectly honest.
And that all comes from stories. And if you want to, I mean, there's some real classic examples, like what do you feel when I say to you, Diet Coke break?
Oh, the man that turns up and cuts. I get an image of the man that turns up and starts mowing the grass, and that song comes on. All the women run to the window to go and have a look at him while he's drinking a Diet Coke. I mean, I don't know how old that advert is, but that's immediately what sprung to mind.
Absolutely. And so they run that story with you over and over and over again. And they run that experience with you over and over and over again. And that music, and they tie it all together. And then, right when you're at the peak of your emotion, and this is important, when you're at the peak of the emotion, ping, the Diet Coke logo for the last few seconds. And that's it. That's it. A neural pathway in your brain has been connected. And every single time that happens, that neural pathway gets stronger.
Clever stuff, isn't it? Clever stuff. Which is why I suppose you've kind of pivoted, haven't you, in your quest to redefine. You've pivoted into brand and transformation, and you started working with your partner now, and her background is around NLP and kind of getting into the psychology of someone. So I mean, it sounds like an amazing initiative. How did this come about, this approach to bringing brand and human transformation together?
It was twofold, really. First of all, we sort of discovered, and I think that us in the branding community really understand that now, with pretty much every market being crowded, every platform being noisy and saturated, the brands that make a difference and that succeed are the ones that are really bold, really stand out against what everyone else is doing. BrewDog in the beer industry, for instance, people that really go against the grain. That's great. We can build those strategies, like, absolutely, because all we have to do is we have to look at what everyone else is doing, and we have to do something completely radically different. Great. But there's a massive problem there, because as humans, and everyone connected with the brand, inside and outside the brand, is a human, we inherently find standing out and being different very, very difficult. For many, almost impossible, because we're wired to be tribal. We're wired to act in groups. We're wired to be sheep and follow the pack. And it takes a hell of a lot of courage and guts and determination and confidence and that magic word again, certainty, that I'm not going to look like an idiot if I do this and it all goes wrong, right? Which sometimes it does. Like, sometimes it does. It takes a lot of courage and guts. And I was finding over and over again that I would work with a founder or a leadership team in a business, and together with me pushing them, we'd come up with something really bold, really stand out. And I knew it was really going to connect with people. And then I, you know, handed all the paperwork across, gave them the handshake and walked off, and nothing happened.
Yeah.
It's just tumbleweed. And you call them up 6 weeks later and you go, where's the launch? Where's the video that we talked about? Where's the adverts? You know, why aren't you doing this? What is the problem? And is there something I can help with? And they go, it's too bold. Like, we're going to do kind of what the leaders in our industry are already doing, because, you know, it's working for them. It's like, yeah, great. That's exactly why it's not going to work for you.
Yeah. It's a big challenge, isn't it? And
it is.
It's difficult to, because as much as people want to stand out, they also, as you say, want to kind of blend in. It's when I have conversations with people, it's okay. Yeah, we really like the look of this brand in our looking at competitors and things, or we really like this website. Can we have something similar? Or we really like this ethos. And it's like, okay, well, if you're just taking inspiration from all of your competitors and everyone else within your industry and your landscape, and you're trying to reflect that, then you're just going to blend in. And clearly that's not what you want. You want to stand out against your competitors. So it's a difficult challenge.
It's again, so, and this is the exact reason that me and Jenny got together, right? Is because, again, it all comes down to the word emotion. Like, we can logically know that we need to stand out and be really bold and all the rest of it, but if our emotions get in the way of that, we can't do it. So not only have we got to connect the brand with the emotions of the audience, we've got to deal with the emotions of the people within the brand so that their emotions don't hold them back. Because emotion's going to determine, right, if you're successful or not. Emotion's going to be the biggest determiner of whether you succeed or not. And there are a number of emotions that are going to accelerate what you're doing, right? And they are passion, confidence, certainty. I could go on. They're going to accelerate what you're doing every single time. And then there's a ton of emotions that are going to, like, slam the brakes on. And that's fear, self-doubt, a lack of motivation. Like, I don't personally really see motivation as an emotion, but I'm going to throw it in there because it's a thing for a lot of people. So your emotions are either going to accelerate what you're doing or they're going to put the brakes on. What we do, Jenny and I do as a pair, is that I deal with the emotions and the audience psychology of building a brand that connects to people outside. Jenny deals with the people inside the brand and helping them control and build the right emotions that are going to accelerate what we're doing together. And we think and we believe and we've seen that that combo together is the biggest difference that we can give to a business.
And has there been a particular client you've worked with where there's been a significant transformation where you've already seen it making a real difference and it having a really positive outcome for a client?
Yeah, there's a number actually. There's a music school in Derby who came to us because they said we need to rebrand to sell. Like we've had enough of this business. Like it's going nowhere. We've got to rebrand this so that it's worth something on the market, so we can get shot. So okay, great. Like it's not a big driver for us, you know. But when I started to look at it, there was more to be had, and we completely rebranded the business from the inside out. We focused on the emotions of the audience and all the rest of it, and we even completely renamed them. We put it out, and they loved it. And there was the normal hiccup that we've just been talking about is. Like a week later, we went, "How are you doing?" And they went, "Well, to be honest, we're completely frozen. Like this is such a big leap that we are just frozen in sort of fear and don't know what to do." So we did a lot of coaching work with them and got them over that, and they put it out. And within 6 weeks, they decided that they were no longer going to sell, that they'd fallen back in love with the business. That it had a whole new direction. It was getting loads more attention, not only from customers, but from people contacting them saying they wanted to work with them. The founder even said to me that he'd taken the sort of brand strategy guide to his mum, who had never supported anything he'd ever done. And his mum said, "Finally, I think you've got something here."
Wow, that's incredible.
And he just burst into tears because
Oh,
she was like, "You've got something here, go and do it."
yeah.
And he was like, "Yeah."
What
So,
an amazing story. Wow,
yeah,
that's amazingly transformational.
but it took both the brand strategy and the coaching of the people within the business to get to that point. Otherwise, there's no way that they would have actually put it out into the world. And we have several clients who are doing great, really good. But we still do, both Jenny and I do a monthly Zoom call with them for like an hour and a half just to reassure them, to look at any slight tweaks we need to make to the strategy, because nothing's set in stone, right? It's like the world changes all the time and we need to sort of be fluid in what we're doing. And we just do a little check-in with them once a month. Like set the goals for the month ahead, and stuff like that we found just makes a massive difference.
Yeah, it does make a massive difference. And that's the thing, we talked about a lot of people thinking that brand is the logo. And I was talking about this recently, saying that as much as I say, and likewise you say, Matt, that it's not, the design part is still really, really important because that is then how you're communicating and translating the brand strategy. But the strategy is just another word for a plan, and it's about having a plan and having a roadmap to guide you towards your goal. If you're making a plan and you have a strategy, but you're not making sure that you're still on track and you're on the right route, and over time the goal might change because the business has changed or grown or things have happened. The strategy is about continually looking at that and looking at how you're managing the meaning of your brand consistently, and that has to be monitored and looked at, doesn't it?
I like to use the analogy of Google Maps when I'm explaining this to a client. So you open Google Maps and you tell it where you are right now. It knows where you are, but you tell it right now where you are and you tell it where you want to get to. Yeah. And that's the first stage that we do with a client with a brand strategy, right? We look at where they are right now, where they want to get to, and then we plan the route, right? So you set off on the route, but how many times do you set off on the route? And Google Maps goes, "Oh, do you know what? I found a better route. Like,
Yeah, this is This is quicker. This saves more fuel. Yeah. All this traffic here.
And Google's doing that by constantly monitoring feedback from all the other people using Google Maps, from loads of data, from traffic cams and all the rest of it. So it's constantly measuring and monitoring the journey and going, do you know what? That's not great now. Let's just divert off here a little bit. But all within, and this is really important, all within the same from where I am to where I want to be now.
Yeah. I love that. And I have a similar kind of outlook in that when you're planning a journey, I say to someone, if you want to get from where you are now to London, for example, you've probably got a bit of a vague idea as to what direction London is in. And if you set off in your car without a map, you're probably going to get there. But if you have a map and you have some directions, you're going to save time, you're going to save fuel, you're going to be able to know where you need to stop off, when you need a rest or, you know, a wee or whatever. And it's very much the same, isn't it? It's having those opportunities to stop, to reconfigure, to assess how you feel, what's happening around you, and if you need to make any tweaks. And if you're running a business, then you should be doing that anyway, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's another key reason why we can never say the phrase that me and you hear all the time, we've had our branding done. There's no such thing. Like, branding's never done.
No.
Branding is never done. It's a constant evolving, living process, just like a journey using Google Maps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, you might want to stop up for a picnic, hey? Who doesn't like to stop for a picnic every now and again? But you need a plan for that, right?
Yeah, no. It's very, very true. And I think it's good to have these kinds of conversations and explain brand in these terms, you know, the way we talk about the journey and the map, and your analogy of Google Maps, I love that, because then people start to get it. And I think sometimes brand builders and brand strategists can use a lot of jargon, a lot of terminology that business owners don't necessarily know or understand. And then it becomes intangible. And they're like, well, what does that mean? How does that relate to me? And that's what I like about your approach as well. It's not this elitist kind of egotistical approach to things. It's about helping people to understand and showing people that we're here to help and guide rather than dictate and make people feel silly for not understanding.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's really important to me. I mean, first of all, as branders, we're always telling our clients to put ourselves in their customer's shoes, right? And I think a lot of branders are guilty of not following through with that themselves. You know, we've got to put ourselves in business owner's shoes so that we can understand what they're struggling with, how they're thinking, what they're feeling, so that we can help them to understand why this is going to make such a big difference. Yeah. Also, for me, so my real driving reason for this is that I believe that it's not governments and sort of high-level powers and things that make the real changes in the world that we need as humans. It's actually businesses. It's been shown time and time again, you know, the invention of the car, the telephone, electricity, were all done by businesses. A lot of big human challenges have been overcome by businesses. I want to help businesses that have a vision, have the impact to be able to make that change in the world so that we all benefit. Because I think there is a ton of great ideas out there that will never happen unless we help them take the action.
Hear. I couldn't agree more. And when you talked about that, the business that came to my mind was Volvo, and thinking about when they basically invented the three-point seatbelt. And rather than sell it, they shared it. They shared it with other car manufacturers. And it's pretty much the same design that is in all cars today, and they could have so easily have kept that to themselves or patented it or charged for it. But it wasn't about that. It was about wanting to improve a level of safety in cars. And even now, you know, Volvo is synonymous with safety. You think of the safest car, and Volvo comes to mind because they set that precedent that they wanted to have that impact on the world and help people stay safe in cars. So I think what you say is really, really important about it's businesses out there that are being innovative, that are coming up with these ideas, these products and services that want to have a positive impact on the world. And it's about how brand can help them to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't have to be huge, massive ideas like Volvo and the seatbelt or Tesla cars, or it doesn't have to be massive. Like for me, someone starting a small, ethically sourced coffee shop in their own town who's really passionate about bringing amazing coffee to people, you're changing people's lives. That idea is changing people's lives on a local level. And, you know, I'm all about that.
Yeah.
And I'm all about bringing my sort of big brand experience to those smaller businesses, because I think they need the most help.
Yeah, definitely. So looking ahead then, what do you envisage is going to be the future of Q Branch Consulting? You talked about, you know, this meaningful impact that you want to have on brand and human transformation. How do you see that happening?
So, yeah, it's a bold, big mission, but we want to help as many people with great ideas as possible, with the strategies and the confidence to take the action that will make all our lives better in some way, whether it's through coffee, through underwear, or even, you know, through the bigger ideas of we work with a charity who are trying to completely rewrite the narrative around male suicide. That's quite an important piece of work for us. And so small idea, massive idea, I don't really care. If you're going to make lives better, that's our mission.
What an amazing mission, Matt. I love that. And we're absolutely rooting for you. And yeah, it sounds like you and Jenny are an amazing team. And yeah, just wish you every success, and just want to say thank you so much for coming on and talking to us today.
No, thanks. I've absolutely loved it. It's great just to get together with someone who's on the same wavelength and just absolutely go into it and try and sort of demystify a lot of this stuff and give people something more to think about. And I think if I want people to think about one thing from this, it is work out what you want people to feel and then work out how you're going to achieve that.
Love that. Absolutely love that. If people want to reach out to you, Matt, what's the best way for them to do that?
I love connecting with people. And so the best way is to grab me on LinkedIn, Matt Clutterham. Believe me, with that name, there's not many of us around. So if you find me, I've got a little green jigsaw piece at the end of my name. Give us a connection. I'd love to get to know you.
Thank you for listening to Build Better Brands. I am so grateful to have you tuning into the show, and I'd love to thank you personally. So wherever you are in the world, remember to tag at Danielle Clark Creative in your social media posts and stories. Let us know when you're listening. You want to know what you've enjoyed about the show and give you a shout out. And if you would like to help more people like you discover the show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. It's going to help us rank higher and reach more listeners. It's also a great way for us to help you with the problems your brand might be facing. Suggest a topic in your review and we might feature it and you in one of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.